It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Mike.
And you're with Mike McHugh and the boys from Harvell and Collins in studio. Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell are here. And gentlemen, welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I think this is our second segment in the new year, but I'll say it anyway. You never can say it enough. Good morning and happy new year to you all. And we're going to talk about a topic that is very dear and close to my heart. I love deeds.
Yes.
And Cecil, you're going to flesh out some more information on deeds. So.
Absolutely. You know, there are primarily three types of deeds in the state of North Carolina that have different effects. The first one, I think, that is kind of easy to talk about right out of the gate is the tenants by entirety deed. Kind of some strange words, tenancy by entirety, E-N-T-I-R-E-T-Y. But this is a deed between spouses. You must be married in the state of North Carolina at the time that the title goes into, you know, Jane Doe and wife Mary Doe. Or you can maybe own the property. John could own the property individually and then get married. And then now that he is married, retitle the property, John Doe and wife Mary Doe. But the question is just, are the parties married at the time that the deed, at the time that the conveyance was made? Now, the word wife or husband or spouse is not critical. It can say, and sometimes does, say just John Doe and Mary Doe. And then, of course, one kind of begins to say, well, they must be married. Well, we're going to have to find that out as lawyers. We can't make assumptions as lawyers. But the bottom line is that if they are, even though it doesn't say and spouse or and wife or and husband, if we find out that they are married, then guess what? It's tenants by entirety. Now, the effect of this deed is that if either party dies, the title to this property by operation of law upon the moment of death vests in the survivor.
Makes sense.
And this is really the critical component of this type of deed. Every single day, you know, husband comes in, wife has died, or wife comes in, husband has died, and, you know, Mr. Harvell, I really didn't do anything about my deed. Do I need to? And the answer is no. You don't have anything. You don't have anything that you must do, Mr. Jones. Since you and your wife own the property jointly, upon the death of your wife, the property just went to you. I had this yesterday, actually.
Okay. Fresh in your mind.
So this is tenants by entirety. There are some questions out of the gate in terms of just confirming that the parties are married at the time that the title was taken, things of that nature. But once that's confirmed, this is a title that that certainly most lawyers know would vest in the survivor, and that is really the critical element or the most important element of this deed.
Let me ask you a question. Is there such a thing as, you hear common law marriage. So
yes.
a man and a woman are living in the same house, let's just say for 6 years. Do any of those, does that time frame, do you want to get into that?
It's not recognized in North Carolina.
It's not, okay.
It has to be, you know, a statutory marriage based on, you know, actually
being,
you know,
married,
joining
the club.
Certificate.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, but, you know, back to the deed situation, you know, what we're talking about today really is a different type of joint or concurrent ownership type deeds.
Okay.
You know, of course, you have deeds where it's just conveyed to an individual.
Sure.
But where the deeds that get a little bit more confusing for folks would be these joint deeds. So this tenants by entirety deed, it doesn't have to state on the face of the deed that this property is held tenants by entirety. Just as Cecil was saying, if the spouses are married at the time they take ownership of the property and both names appear on the actual deed, then it's automatically considered a tenants by entirety interest.
Okay.
And the right of survivorship obviously is a very important component as it relates to that. Another component that's interesting is what part of the property, and we're talking about a particular piece of property that's owned tenants by entirety. is it subject to the judgments? Is it subject to the liabilities of both or either of the owners? And the answer is that it's not. So, for example, we have husband, wife, tenants by entirety property, and let's say that the husband has business liability. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's a credit card, or there can be a credit account, or there could be some type of liability relative to that particular business. Then the husband finds himself in a lawsuit. Well, then let's say the lawsuit ends up in a judgment where a judge or jury makes a determination that this person is responsible for $100,000, for example. Well, one of the properties that can't be touched as it relates to collecting on that judgment would be tenants by entirety property.
Ooh, okay.
Because the judgment is not against husband and wife. It's only against one party. So tenants by entirety property escapes the judgment against either of the tenants by entirety owner.
So it protects that spouse that is married to the individual that has those outstanding issues.
It does.
Nice. It absolutely does. Nice. And we're going to see a big distinction here in a moment between that deed, tenants by entirety, and another different type of deed, which we're going to discuss here in a minute.
Okay.
Now, a hybrid of tenants by entirety, which, again, to just repeat, is between spouses. That's a matter of fact.
Sure.
I mean, is there a certificate of marriage or is there not? There either is or there isn't.
You're either married or not. You know,
correct.
And you know if you're married.
And that's a certificate of marriage, okay? Not just a, as you said, common law or statement of marriage or intention. Is there a certificate on file? If there is, the parties are married. Now, the next type of deed, which is just the other side of that coin, would be a tenancy with right of survivorship. And this is a deed where on its face it states that the parties to the deed intend their interest to pass to the surviving tenant owner on the deed. In other words, the language is there between John and Mary that upon the death of John, this deed is with right of survivorship. And that has to be expressed now in the deed. You remember a moment ago, Wes mentioned that the tenants by entirety doesn't have to be expressed.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a matter of inquiry. But this is not a matter of inquiry. This is a matter of the expressed language in the deed. Now, this deed arises in several contexts. First of all, sometimes when folks are in a relationship long term, but are not married and have no intention to get married. Maybe they've been married before. Maybe they've got children from prior marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the case might be? They just maybe don't want to get married, okay?
Sure.
This would be a situation where they would be able to put their home in a tenancy with right of survivorship so that if one of the partners in the marriage were to die, the survivor would inherit, okay? This can also happen in a business context, sometimes two business folks own property together. They're partners in their business, and they want the business property to pass to the surviving partner.
Okay?
So this would be the type of title that operates somewhat similar to tenants by entirety in terms of survivorship, but here we find the title needs to be expressed. The language needs to be expressed in the deed. So this would be a joint tenancy with right of survivorship deed.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next deed is a deed just between good old folks, okay? John, Mary, and Sue, they own a property. Well, or John and Mary own it, or John and David own it. There's no express joint with right of survivorship language, and they're not married. They just own the property. This, of course, is what we lawyers and what is known in the law as a tenants in common interest. 50-50, a third, a quarter, 25% owners, okay? Gets a little bit cumbersome when you've got eight or nine.
Sure.
Okay, but absolutely. You know, we see it all the time, properties that are in families that are owned by, you know, multiple family members, okay? Tenants in common. A tenants in common interest in a property is a very interesting and probably the most complex ownership in the state of North Carolina with the most questions because, first of all, well, who has the right to live there? And who has the responsibility to pay the bills? And who's going to pay the taxes? Who's going to pay the insurance? All these questions seem to arise when folks own property just in a tenants in common interest. And one more distinction right out of the gate here is that, guess what? Your particular interest in the property, your third or your half, is in fact subject to your creditors, unlike the tenants by entirety deed between spouses. If you just own a third of a property, but you have an IRS lien or you have a recorded judgment, then your third of the property is subject to that judgment.
Really, it really sounds in this latter case that we're talking about, this latter type of deed, is when you get people outside the family that you're just doing partners with, six, seven, eight individuals, not related by blood. You really got to have your ducks in a row and have everything documented and have good legal counsel so that when situations arise, you can go back to that document and say, this is what we're doing.
And I'm going to get Wes to come on in here in just a moment, but let me just say very quickly, usually this type of title evolves as the result of inheriting property.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, this is the way that, you know, brothers and sisters inherit property, a third, a third, a third, 50-50, a quarter, a quarter, a quarter, a quarter. Mom and dad just left the property to the three children or the two children. Or maybe it's not mom and dad. Maybe it's granddad or aunt or uncle. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is that a lot of times this property is inherited property.
Passed down.
It doesn't matter whether it's inherited or whether it was bought and paid for and titled in that way. But the bottom line is that probably most of the time this tenants in common interest evolves as a result of an inheritance.
Very good. Let's hold Wes's thought to the break here. We'll come back with more Harvell and Collins. If you have questions, please call us at 252-247-7282. We're talking about deeds. It's a very important topic. We'll be back with more after this short break on Coastal Daybreak. We'll be right back. We're having a very stimulating conversation this morning with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins and the weekly segment Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about deeds, and Wes, you want to continue this conversation about the tenancy in common deed. It's a very
right. You know, the tenants in common ownership interest is basically, you know, Cecil indicated, a percentage interest among people, among the owners, whoever's shown on the deed. In many cases, we end up with, you know, a tenants in common ownership interest being a percentage for each owner, like Cecil indicated, through an inheritance.
Sure.
You know, another way that's pretty common in which we end up with tenants in common property is when there's a divorce, husband and wife divorce, and the property doesn't get dealt with for some reason in the divorce proceeding. Like if husband and wife have a summary judgment divorce very quickly, and they don't deal with the separation of property like they probably should, and the property then ends up being, by operation of law, tenants in common. It's no longer tenants by entirety because the marriage has severed. So the property becomes tenants in common. So then, you know, when we own tenants in common property, you know, kind of where the rubber hits the road, you know, at Harvell and Collins, and I'm sure with other law firms, a lot of the questions that you end up dealing with as an attorney regarding the tenants in common property would be things like, you know, I own this interest in this property with my brother and my sister, or, you know, my friend or whatever it may be, or my former spouse, and they're not carrying their weight, okay? We don't have an agreement with regard to who's going to pay the taxes, insurance, maintenance. We don't have an agreement about who has right to use, for example, the beach house, you know, and this has become a big conflict. I feel like I'm carrying all the weight. What can I do about it? Well, first of all, it's important to understand, you know, possession is a big part of tenants in common ownership interest. Folks think of it as, you know, if you say, okay, Mr. Collins owned this property with this other person 50-50, what part is mine?
Yeah, which half of the pie is mine?
You won't draw a line down the middle of the house. You own 50% of the whole thing. You have right to access, and your other owner has the right to access. Well, that might be a little awkward. That might create a problem.
Sure.
Okay, depending on the circumstances. Hopefully, we hope that folks get along, but they don't always get along.
Not in the families. Yeah.
So in the event that, you know, we have these type of conflicts, then the law has a built-in remedy that normally is a pretty quick remedy, which is called a partition. And a partition of real property is originated at the clerk of court level, where there's a petition to partition the property. And in the event that the property can be partitioned in kind, meaning split, then that's what the court has to do. The court has to make a determination with the help of what's called commissioners. These are a group of three experts, so to speak, who usually have a surveyor, an appraiser, maybe a lawyer, to help make a determination as to what an equal split of the property would be. So normally when we're talking about an actual split of the property, where owner one is going to own one half by themselves and owner two is going to own the other half by themselves, then you're talking about farmland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about maybe acreage. You know, it could be a situation where there's a house, but probably if there's a house on the property, one of the property owners is going to receive the house and the other is going to receive more of the property, you know, to offset it, to equalize it. So in this partitioning proceeding, we look at actually dividing the property out in kind, but in some circumstances, you just can't do that. I mean, if it's a lot in Brandywine here in Carteret County,
right,
with a house on it, you can't split it in two.
Yeah.
So, you know, what the court then would do would be a forced sale of the property. That could be a public sale, like on the courthouse steps.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a private sale, which is basically the appointment of a commissioner, usually an individual commissioner, who then lists the property with a realtor, and it's just like selling the property yourself.
Yeah.
But normally, if the tenants and common owners can't agree to sell it, or they can't agree on other issues, they can't agree on who the realtor is going to be, or, you know, how much we're going to sell it for, or these kind of things. So the clerk then gives the authority to the commissioner to sell the property, notwithstanding the interest or the desires of the tenants and common, you know, owners. And then obviously the proceeds from the sale would then be divided after the court takes into consideration offsets and credits. For example, let's say one of the two owners has been paying the taxes over the years and wants to get reimbursed from the sale. Well, this is the appropriate time to bring that claim. Let's say one of the owners has been paying the insurance. Let's say one of the owners has been living in the property at the exclusion of the other. Well, that's a value.
Yeah.
There's value in being able to live somewhere for free. Although you have a right to the whole, you would be responsible for one half of the reasonable rental value to your other owner if you're excluding the use by the other owner, not letting them come in the property, those kind of things.
It sounds like there's innumerable things that could come up. Like you just mentioned, you know,
lots of circumstances
yeah, that, you know, this discussion we're having today could probably last for hours. And probably when you're involved with these cases, they can run on for months, perhaps years, to get it all the pieces settled.
Well, you know, what's it, Mike? The good thing about the petition to partition is a fairly quick remedy.
Is it? Yeah.
Because what the petitioner has to prove is not that much. They just have to prove that we're actually tenants and common owners of property.
Get that established.
That's it. The clerk of court then has to enter the order requiring it to be partitioned. And, you know, in many cases when we're dealing with these cases early on and there's a dispute among property owners regarding real property and how it's being used, possessed, who's paying for the taxes, maintenance, you know, all of these type things, whether it's to be rented, then we're going to encourage the parties to try to reach a resolution.
Yeah.
And sometimes just by old Mr. Lawyer over here, you know, reaching out to the other owner and knowing, well, here we are, we're going to have to go down this partition proceeding, it kind of gets them to the table and it gets worked out.
Yeah, get it off.
But when it doesn't, a partition proceeding is a relatively efficient and quick resolution. Now, I've had partition proceedings go on for 5, 6, 7 years, and it hasn't been resolved. But those are type situations where this is property that's passed down generation after generation.
Yeah.
We have tons of owners. We've got tax liens. We've got title problems. We've got encroachments. Sometimes these partition proceedings take on, you know, kind of more issues, bigger issues that have to get really fleshed out. But the time to do it is in the partition itself.
Yeah, so. Sounds like it. Well, very good. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll close with this segment of Harvell and Collins. You're listening to Coastal Daybreak and Mike McKim. Lots to talk about when you're talking about deeds and property and all that comes with it. So, Cecil.
There absolutely is. And, of course, we're here now the last few minutes talking about tenants in common or the undivided interest holder, the holder of property a third, and a third, or 50-50. And, of course, right out of the gate, you know, they're just the client has just questions about, well, can I go on the property without the permission of my sister? Can I spend the night there without the permission of my brother? Can I go replace the screen door? Do I have access to the property? Can I rent the property without the permission of my brother or sister? There just is every permutation of question with regard to this type of ownership. What, of course, eventually happens is that folks either resolve it, which most of the time they do, or we potentially land in these petitions to partition, much like Wes was just describing. The philosophy of law here, there is very much a historic precedent at play, which is that our courts and our law, Mike, are going to absolutely encourage the highest and best use of a property.
Sure.
And as a result of this, these statutes are very clear that the parties have this right to settle the issues with regard to the property. And that, you know, let's do it now. Let's don't let this title that is owned by three suddenly be owned by six or nine or 12 or more.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and resolve this title now. And so as Wes was saying, this petition to partition is a very active area of the law and is certainly a good remedy for these situations where folks just cannot resolve their ownership interest in a property that they own by tenants in common.
Because I think that the property owners, the family, whoever they happen to be, they want closure to this. I mean, that's what they're coming to the table for.
That's right.
They don't want to see it string out for 6-7 years, like Wes said, in an anomaly. Seems to be anomaly cases. More than likely, they get everything on the table, and you guys hash it out, and everybody walks away from the table
satisfied.
We hope so. That's the goal.
That's right.
That's the goal at Harvell and Collins. So we're going to wrap up this segment. I wanted to thank Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell for coming in this morning. If you want to reach them, call them at their office, 252-762-9050. They're located here in Morehead City, 1107 Bridges Street. Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday. Thank you.